"Hi, stranger," Gilbert said. He handed her a metal rod and then slid a marshmallow onto the end. "Hello," she mumbled. She stared intently at her marshmallow, holding it outside the lower flames to avoid blackening it. She used her left hand to hold the rod and kept her right arm behind her. The burn was mostly healed, but echoes of the pain came back if she got too close to heat. Gilbert stood close beside her. "Too bad you got that pretty new coat. Now you don't need my jacket," he said. "Did you see Tommy and Dwayne? They make a swell couple." She smiled. "They sure do." "We would too," he said softly. He shifted his weight from one foot to the other. There was a long pause while Naomi tried to think of some way of moving the conversation away from this notion. "You could have any girl you want," she said. "You're the one I want, though," he said. His voice was low, and the flickering firelight played across his tan cheeks. "Surely not," she said. She felt herself stiffen, and it was all she could do not to back away and run. "Don't you know how pretty you are? You know I'm not like other girls here." "You're good as anybody," he said, his voice rising a little. "Sure, some people have their ideas, but where you're from don't bother me none. Nothing wrong with being Mexican. And anyway, my pa always said it's a man's job to bring his woman up a bit." Naomi bit her tongue. She knew he meant to be kind. "I can't," she said finally. "How come? You ain't seeing anybody else, are you?" "What difference does it make?" Naomi asked, dodging his question to avoid an outright lie. "It's not enough for you to like me." "Oh." His face fell. "You mean you don't like me?" "Sure, I understand." He nodded slowly and stepped back. "It's not that," she said quickly. "I like you, but not that way. Let's be friends." He laughed. "That excuse is more used than a box of ivory flakes on wash day." She shrugged. "I'm not like everybody else," she said again. Her left hand disappeared into the pocket of her skirt, and she ran her finger in rapid circles around the birds on her ring. "Wash, wash, wash." "Friends, then," Gil said, a touch of bitterness in his voice. "Friends," she said. It was a quarter till midnight before Naomi could get away from the bonfire. She raced from the church, following the edge of the river. When the land started to rise, she cut sharply to the north. She needed to hurry if she was going to make it in time. She got to the top of the hill and scanned the area as she caught her breath. A moment later, she saw movement in the bushes, but it was only a small covey of bobwhites startled from their roost. She had come across the huge magnolia tree while out on a walk with the twins the week before. The tree's thick limbs draped all the way to the ground, forming a kind of low-ceilinged room surrounded by the waxy, evergreen leaves. The branches were strung all the way up into the crown of the tree, which stretched 50 or 60 feet into the sky. The twins had begged her to help them climb it, so she'd pointed out the foothold and handholds all the way up. Now, her hands itched to find their way up again. She untied the yellow ribbon Gotti had put in her hair and draped it on a low branch so Wash would know that she was in the tree. She wanted to share this view with him, and their regular spot was too far from the church for her to manage a meeting. He'd promised to come at midnight if he could get away. She made her way up the tree, working carefully to avoid snagging her new dress. The view from the top was even more breathtaking at night. She could see the county laid out across the hills. There was the Baptist church, its steeple partly illuminated by the high flames of the bonfire. She could see lights on in the humble camp and in houses scattered here and there in clearings. The moon was reflected in the Sabine for a moment, then heavy clouds darkened the sky again. In distant clearings, firecrackers went off. Across the landscape, flares burned bright blue and gold as far as she could see. She had counted 49 flares when she thought she heard movement at the bottom of the tree. "Is that you?" she called down softly, but there was no answer. "Wash," she whispered. For a panicked moment, she imagined that someone had followed her from the church. Even the twins would cause her problems right now. "Say something," she pleaded with the darkness. "I love you," came Wash's voice. "That is something," she said, laughing. "Say it again, but not like a question." "I love you." The branches beneath her creaked. The heavy, dark leaves rustled. Closer, closer. She sucked in a breath, felt it cold in her chest. "Again," she said. "I love you." He was on the branch beneath hers, and his hands slid up her stockings, slowly, slowly. His fingers crept over her knees, then stopped. "Well?" he said. Naomi closed her eyes and listened, and felt the age of the tree trunk under her hands. She remembered all the lights she'd seen over the countryside, only now they were compressed in the center of her chest. Her heart was a ball of light, and it was Wash who had made it so. She tried on the words, "I love you." Nothing had ever felt truer. Wash let out a breath and slid his hands up to her thighs. He lifted her down onto his branch and held her tight, and she knew for certain that hers was not the only heart full of light. Then fireworks exploded over the church in red and green and blue bursts. Midnight. Their kiss outlasted the fireworks. January 1937. Wash. Wash was so busy finding ways to be with Naomi that he all but forgot the scheme to get money to improve the colored school. But the seed of his idea had sprouted in his father's imagination, and a week into the new year, Wash found himself walking with his father toward Mr. Crane's back porch. They'd had a meeting set with the school board, but the entrance to the main hall and all the side doors of the school had been locked tight. Wash stopped in the middle of Mr. Crane's yard, but his father continued up the porch steps and knocked softly at the door. Mr. Crane's stern-faced housekeeper answered it. "Can I help you?" "Good evening, Miss Kayla," Jim began. "I hope you can. I'm looking for the superintendent. We had a meeting with the school board set for this evening. I thought it would be in the administrative office, but the school is locked." Kayla's eyes drifted toward the school before settling on Wash. "Mr. Crane isn't available tonight, sir." "I'm sure the meeting was today," Jim said. "Mr. Fuller, I'm telling you, the superintendent isn't available." Her words rang out sharply, and her hands were at her hips. Jim frowned and glanced back at Wash. Wash shrugged and checked his watch. It was almost 6 o'clock, and the meeting was supposed to be at 5:30. When he looked up, he saw a curtain move in one of the parlor windows and a glimpse of Mr. Crane's long, sharp nose and close-cropped white hair. "Come off it, Miss Kayla. I can see Mr. Crane up there in the parlor." Wash raised his voice.
Evening, Mr. Crane. We're hoping to speak with you.
He flashed a grin in the direction of the window, but the face was gone.
Y'all best go on quick now. Don't want to find no trouble or make none.
Kayla said softly, urgently. This time her words were just for them.
Thank you, Miss Kayla, Jim said. He headed down the steps.
There's no trouble here. We can wait a spell, Wash called.
His father shot him a warning look, but he stopped and waited next to Wash. Kayla twisted a dish towel in her hand and went back into the kitchen. A few minutes later, the screen door opened, and there was Mr. Crane.
Sorry about this, Jim. I surely am.
Thank you, sir, Wash's father said, turning on his humble but charming voice. I'm obliged to you for setting up the meeting.
Jim, Mr. Crane began, it's like this. To make changes to the budget, we have to have the whole school board present.
Of course, sir. That's why we came, like we talked about last week.
Yes, but as you saw, a number of board members have elected...
They're voting with their absence, came a gruff voice. Cowardly, or diplomatic, if you want a $4 word for it.
The owner of the voice navigated his bulk through the doorway and jostled past Mr. Crane onto the porch, a tumbler in hand. He let the screen door slam behind him.
Me? I got no problem telling you that your pickaninny school is plenty good for what it's intended for. The rest of my esteemed colleagues, they'd rather ignore you till you give up than call you an uppity son of a bitch to your face.
Wash saw his father's shoulders tighten.
Evening, Mr. Gibbler. I'm simply here to give a presentation, sir, to explain the needs of our community, and to show the benefit your help would have for white citizens as well. Of course, I know there are limits, but surely...
He gestured at the pump jacks pulling oil out of the ground.
With the oil money. With the taxes and...
He nodded at Wash.
The savings from switching to the raw gas.
We got plenty to spend our money on right over here. Your school's better than half the white schools in Texas. What in the hell is it you want now?
Gibbler asked.
A few books for the children, sir.
Jim spread his hands apologetically. Gibbler frowned and leaned a beefy thigh against the porch railing.
Let's see. If I recall correctly, we gave you all a truckload of primers at the end of last school year. Plus books for your library, even some supplies. Desks and chairs, I do believe.
He ticked the items off on his fingers. They were as large as sausages and just as fat. Wash swallowed a laugh. He'd spent half his summer repairing the battered furniture the whites had tossed out. And the primers? The only one that wasn't missing sections had an obscene drawing inked on every page.
You're right, sir, Jim said, and we are most grateful for your generosity. Most grateful, sir.
Wash could hardly stand the bootlicking tone. He stared into the woods so that he wouldn't have to see the smile he knew was still plastered on his father's face. The thought of the woods made him bold, and Wash took a step forward, then another.
They're missing pages, he said.
Sir,
what was that, Washington?
Mr. Crane asked.
Speak up, son.
I said, those books we got from y'all, they were all missing pages. I can fix busted furniture, but I can't make pages appear for the little ones to learn their lessons.
His father turned and gave Wash a hard stare, his lips tight.
What my son means to say is that we're keen on improving the level of education at New London Colored School. Sure want to be a credit to the county. Secondhand doesn't have to mean ruined, Wash said. He knew he was getting careless, but he didn't give a damn anymore. He couldn't simper around these fools and still be what he was becoming for Naomi. If he had to burn bridges to be that man, he would. The next words flew out of Wash's mouth. How about passing down some supplies before they're worn plumb out? How about that, sir? His sense caught up with him in time for him to tack on the sir.
You are mighty brazen, boy, Gibbler said.
He jerked his head left and then right and grinned at the cracking sound his neck made.
You want to be a high-tone colored, huh?
Wash shook his head. No, sir. I'd be pleased to be a simple carpenter. He didn't look at his father, but he could hear his sharp intake of breath. That was another bridge he was setting fire to, although it might not burn so fast. Mr. Crane patted Gibbler on the back.
One thing's for sure. Give him tools and this young man can fix up anything you can find and build anything you can think of. I can vouch for that.
Thank you, sir, Wash said.
Shit, Dan.
Gibbler rattled the ice in his tumbler and held it up in Mr. Crane's direction.
That's something else we need to talk about. I heard from a couple of roustabouts that you got a habit of giving good work away to coloreds. Work that plenty of whites would be glad for.
Mr. Crane took the glass from Gibbler.
There's work to go around.
Jim Fuller's shoulders sagged, and he lifted his hat to his head with trembling hands.
Looks like we ought to be going. Gentlemen, I sure would be glad to try for another meeting. I'll wait to hear from you, of course.
Sure thing, Jim. That's it, said Mr. Crane.
Yeah, Gibbler laughed. The long jowls of his face jiggled. You just wait on us. You come back when we send for you.
Good night, gentlemen, Jim said. Even without seeing his father's face, Wash could feel him urging him to play this right and salvage things as best he could.
Good night, Mr. Crane, Mr. Gibbler, Wash said. And thanks for nothing, he wanted to add.
When they were a good 30 yards away, Wash's father grabbed his arm.
What in Jesus' name were you thinking, talking like that? How do you think we're going to turn them to our cause now?
Wash gave a dry laugh.
Come on, Pa, he said.
You were right. We're dealing with some cold, cold hearts here.
Heck, it'd take an explosion to wake them up.
The last words rang out through the thin January air. Wash and his father glanced back. They didn't see anyone on the porch, and Wash felt a wave of relief and then instant shame. He didn't want to be like his father, chained to yes-sirs forever. But maybe it was harder to burn bridges and break habits than he thought.
The Gang. We had all heard Miranda harping for months about how Naomi was greasing up the school. A greaser's a greaser, maybe. But the real itch in Miranda's panties was about Gilbert asking Naomi out, even if she said no. We all knew that Miranda wanted him for herself. She tried to get him last year, but old Gibbler had bigger and better plans for his one and only daughter. These days, he wasn't letting her out of his sight. Miranda whined to the girls about how Gibbler dragged her around in the back of his Packard whenever he went to check out a strike or stare down an unproductive tool pusher. Nights after school board meetings, she was condemned to sit by Stee alone on Mr. Crane's porch while her father browbeat the old superintendent inside and drank up his bourbon. There was nothing Miranda liked less than sitting around without an audience. We had good reason to believe that, in those moments, she'd have gladly traded her diamond leash for Naomi's wetback freedom. And that only made Miranda hate Naomi more. Maybe that's why she started whispering about Naomi and Mr. Crane's colored boy.
Naomi should have known that Wash and the twins were up to something when she didn't hear from the three of them for over an hour. She'd been sweeping the porch after school.